Welcome to the EU Startups Podcast. Sit back and enjoy the show hosted by Marcin Lewandowski.
You're a startup founder. Finding product market fit is probably your number one priority, but to land bigger customers, you also need security compliance. And obtaining your SOC 2 or ISO 27001 certification can open those big doors, but they take time and energy, pulling you away from building and shipping. That's where Vonta comes in. Vonta is the all-in-one compliance solution, helping startups like yours get audit ready and build a strong security foundation quickly and painlessly. How? Vonta automates the manual security tasks that slow you down, helping you streamline your audit. And the platform connects you with trusted VCSOs to build your program, auditors to get you through audits quickly, and a marketplace for essentials like pen testing. So whether you're closing your first deal or gearing up for growth, Vonta makes compliance easy. Join over 8,000 companies, including many Y Combinator and Techstars startups, who trust Vonta. Simplify compliance and get $1,000 off at vonta.com/EU startups. That's vanta.com/EU startups.
Hey everybody, this is Marcin Lewandowski and you're listening to the EU Startups Podcast. Today's guest has a simple thesis. Europe can win AI if we stop starving talent of power, capital, and speed. Emmett King runs J12, Stockholm/London/Paris-based venture capital fund, backing 40-plus teams like DataCrunch and a wave of new AI builders across the continent. Emmett, it's such a pleasure to have you on the show. Welcome.
Great to be here, Marcin. Thanks for having me.
Amazing. Hope you like the intro. And also, for those who don't know you and don't know anything about J12, maybe you can tell us more about yourself and about what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you covered some of the main bases. But we're a team of founders and operators, as you said, based in Stockholm, London, and Paris, investing very early across Europe in companies that are typically either enabling the development of AI or applying AI in different business contexts. So for us, AI enablers means solutions that enable enterprises to move towards deploying AI at scale or enable individual developers or AI engineers as they kind of work in their workflows to build models and applications. So two examples from our portfolio would be a company called Validio that provides enterprises with a data quality platform to ensure that they can trust data before it gets fed into to AI applications. Mm-hmm. And another would be DataCrunch, which you mentioned, which provides enterprises and developers with the AI compute infrastructure that they need to train models and run those models. And then the other focus that we have, as mentioned, is domain-specific B2B AI applications. So where different underlying technology like LLMs, traditional machine learning, computer vision, agentic AI, where that is applied to specific B2B workflows. So for us, some examples of companies we've invested in would be BuddyWise, which uses computer vision to detect in real time safety risks in industrial workplaces, so like construction sites, chemical plants, factories, to reduce injuries and fatalities. Mm-hmm. Or a company like Dema, which uses AI to help e-commerce and retailers to track, optimize, predict everything within their kind of business operations, from marketing campaigns to inventory management orders, in order to run themselves profitably. So everything that enables AI or applies it at an early stage across Europe, that's pretty much our domain.
Amazing. And so many amazing businesses you also named and told us about. Emmett, it's all very exciting these days regarding the AI and AI revolution and what we can do, how much it empowers people, and whole change. So I was just, I think I read it somewhere when I was doing research before this podcast. So Emmett, and correct me if I'm wrong, maybe you didn't say it, but what does Europe at, you know, an AI crossroads mean in practical terms for founders today?
I think it means, we can take it in different directions. I think for me, it means that we have fantastic talent in Europe that has the opportunity to build leading AI companies. But Europe is in a context where infrastructure, in terms of compute infrastructure, energy infrastructure, capital deployed to these companies all lag behind other parts mm-hmm. of the world, like the US and China. So in one sense, the crossroads is the ability of a great number of people to build great companies, but the challenges that they face in building them here in Europe. And I think what we see as a consequence of that is a lot of founders choosing to build in the US, for example, or potentially, I think we haven't seen it as much now, but that's the risk that we'd be worried about, you know, founders in Europe being outcompeted by US players over time. Mm. So I think in one sense that's the crossroads that we see. Potential, yeah. But challenges to seeing that potential being realized.
So Ahmed, the Europe's talent density is clear, right? Like as you mentioned, like we had amazing talent. So where do, you know, capital, energy capacity and regulatory timing, you know, bite hardest?
I think on the capital side of things, you know, I think if we compare Europe to the US, we'll see a lot more leaning in of capital at early stages towards risky bets. So I think one of the hardest things for founders in Europe at the moment is the need to appease European capital that wants to see more sustainable business growth at an earlier phase than perhaps capital in other parts of the world would require. And that means that companies might not be able to scale with the same velocity that they might do if they were growing in another market with another type of investor base that was willing to fund an unprofitable business for a longer period of time. So I think there's a capital risk appetite that can hurt companies at an early stage. There's a lack of institutional capital at later stages that can make it difficult for growth companies. Mm-hmm. On the regulatory side of things, there's a lot of conversation that, you know, Europe overregulates and that's a hindrance to startups. I think there's an element of that, and regulation needs to be very careful not to to regulate with proportionality. So early and smaller companies don't have the same requirements as larger ones, so that people aren't certifying themselves more than they're building. But I think ultimately, one of the biggest hindrances around regulation is how I see that it freezes the buyers of technology. So it's almost that it makes enterprises slower to adopt new technologies and thus be buyers of startups in Europe. And hence, companies find that actually the market that moves fastest and where enterprises are willing to adopt and buy the technology is in the US, and hence the move there as well. So it's almost not the direct regulation on startups that is, I think, the biggest challenge. I think sometimes it's the buy side of the market that is
there. Yeah, and speaking about, you know, like the energy reality check, as we know, China's, you know, far ahead on data center energy, and the US isn't constrained by renewables mandates like Europe is. Can Europe close that gap? And if yes, then how?
I hope so. I really do, since I think it's increasingly clear that a commoditization of intelligence means that kind of energy abundance, low cost, abundant energy is going to be what differentiates economies in being able to kind of really distribute that intelligence. So we need to catch up. We have the challenges of having an aging energy infrastructure. So energy production and stable grids and these things are a challenge. It requires a huge amount of investment, and I think it requires probably a greater pragmatism than we've had to date when it comes to balancing the continent's ambitions between being at the forefront of driving renewable energy and a sustainability agenda that we, you know, don't want to go away, but at the need to be able to fuel this, you know, compute infrastructure build out. And I think we see maybe more pragmatism in the US and other markets where nuclear energy has a great rebirth and is seen as a solution for a lot of kind of data center build outs. And so I think we need to balance pragmatism with ambition that we have here. But we are definitely behind technologically, particularly China, where I think they're just so far leading when it comes to energy tech. Whether we can invest to catch up or whether we're going to be a purchaser of technology that has developed elsewhere, we'll have to see.
100%. And as you said, like, we've got no other choice. We have to somehow catch up. If we don't want to become, I don't know, irrelevant if Europe doesn't want to become irrelevant at some point. Why calling AI a bubble is lazy, Emmett? Where is application layer, you know, versus infrastructure compounding real value?
This seems to be the question most discussed at the moment, and there's no clarity really. I think the one challenge around that conversation is the lack of a great definition for what a bubble kind of ultimately is. But for sure, we're seeing on the one hand, you know, that there is unprecedented financing of computational infrastructure that we believe will be the foundation of pretty much every industry. So there's a huge coordinated industrial build out that in the long term should deliver great value and productivity gains. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there's this sense of everything still being very premature with regards to our expectations around AI kind of being met in reality. There's a lot of applications that aren't delivering real productivity or real return on investment or any kind of measurable gains. So this...
even Sam Altman, I think, said it that, there is a bubble. Most of the AI companies currently, they're not businesses yet or products, they're expensive demos, right?
So I think we'll definitely see a strong market correction in the short to midterm. How many months that is, I'm not sure, but I think we'll definitely see investors feeling more strongly that hype has exceeded current expectations, and then that's going to see some high valuations crash, see some hesitancy to deploy more capital kind of really creep in. But I don't think that takes away from the fact that a lot of the investment is in key infrastructure that is going to deliver long-term value. But I think we're going to see a change of sentiment and expectations, and that's ultimately probably what tips a bubble over the edge to bursting or deflating or whatever one wants to say. So even though we see the technology improving greatly and our ability to apply that technology is improving, I think for too long the hype grows faster than the gains, and at some point that kind of breaks, and everybody's part of pushing that hype. I think we see a lot of founders aggressively marketing revenue figures in short time periods that are probably not the most robust measures of recurring revenue, kind of extrapolating short-term, maybe contracted revenue rather than kind of real-time sustained, retained, actual recurring revenue. And investors are kind of, you know, part of that dance as well, you know, encouraging that or choosing not to look too closely under the hood and believing in these maybe less strong measures of revenue. And I think that's obviously what pushes valuations up in the near term, but I think the correction is going to come and reset that a little bit. We just have to hope that that rather represents a refining of focus towards where value can be delivered, and a focus towards the long-term value build out, which I think is, I'm not going to say without question, but I think is something that one can strongly believe in. So hopefully there's not too much of a, you know, a shock that makes people pull back. I think rather it might be to Europe's advantage if there is some kind of bubble deflation, in the sense that right now so much capital kind of feeds itself to a number of phenomenally huge US companies. Yeah. If there's a little bit of a, you know, adjustment and expectations there, such that maybe, you know, one could call it a democratization of AI, where maybe it's easier for smaller players to get access to hardware and compute, or founders and researchers with less access to capital might need to be more creative in their abilities to develop frontier AI. And so those without access to the biggest pots of money will suddenly have the playing field a little bit more leveled. So I think through that kind of hardship, we might get some really interesting breakthroughs as well.
100%. And isn't it kind of a part of the game? Like, any time in history we have such huge revolutions and transitions that, like, kind of bubble comes with it, but at the end, like, sure, it might burst, but like, generational companies and changes are being created as a result of it as well. So I would say that 100%, like, there's gonna be some correction or maybe corrections on the way, but the, like, long-term immense value for humanity, in, like, as a net positive, I would say, like, AI is going to be a net positive for society. So very exciting times that we live in. And as you said, like, probably the most discussed question or matter nowadays, like, everywhere, everyone is talking about it.
It's interesting. Yeah. I mean, the different, you mentioned Sam Altman saying about a bubble. It's so hard to distinguish kind of the signal from the noise in that discussion as well, because most of the voices that have something to say also have something to sell. So if you're Sam Altman and you sit on a lot of capital and everybody sees you at the forefront, you know, maybe it's not a bad thing to predict a bubble that is going to mean a lot of the chasing pack fails to raise the capital to catch up, or, you know, there's a lot of self-interest in opinion as well, which is difficult to cut through a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. Emmett, let's talk about AI founders playbook. If you're building in Europe right now, what are the three non-negotiables for an AI startup in 2026?
It's a good question. I'm not sure if these would necessarily be overly particular to building in Europe, but I think three non-negotiables from my perspective, given the globally highly competitive markets that founders are entering into, would be, firstly, and by far number one, the need to attract world-class talent. If you're competing globally in fast-moving spaces and at an early stage, then talent is by far the most important fuel to realizing that. So that talent attraction is number one, non-negotiable. Secondly, I would say the need to find the ways to reach a lot of users quickly. And that's not only because so many people are growing so fast that you need to compete in kind of showing the ability to do so as well, but because the feedback loop from users is such an important flywheel in order to refine technology, but also learn about human AI interaction design. You know, I think we're still so early in really understanding what does the UX UI of this kind of new era look like. So I think both from a product perspective, but from a growth momentum perspective, reaching as many users as possible early is probably more important in this era than maybe it has been before. And then thirdly, I think something else that has become more important now is to build thought leadership and profile around yourself as a founder and around yourself as a company, because as opposed to maybe traditional SaaS, I think AI companies are selling transformation. And if you're selling transformation, then you need to sell trust. Yeah. And in order to, you know, get people to trust you, it's easier if there's a person that they are familiar with, or there's a message that resonates with them, or they perceive that you're at the forefront and leading. It's much harder for anonymous, faceless companies to build the kind of trust in a B2B kind of context, the trust in an organization that it may transform their workflows around an AI solution that you're looking to deliver to them. So I think we've seen that there are a lot of companies where there's a lot more vocal founder branding than maybe we've seen in previous years. And it makes sense from this trust and transformation perspective.
Mm. Nice. Very good points, Emmet. And I agree with all of them, especially the last one. Also, you know, like a society is run on trust, right? People, like whatever you do, like whether you... like everything you do actually during the day, like even starting from waking up, making your coffee, then checking your, I don't know, bank application, whatever, and other applications. Like these are all like we trust that it's safe to do. And we trust that everything we do is kind of, and people around us, like, yeah, like the holistic view is that we need, like, society operates on trust. So if you want to be the next, like, category defining company, and as you said, like, it's an AI era, so like people will be maybe trusting less, or like AI will take care of the technology part. You need that one, or maybe not even one, but like there, so you need a human side of things behind it, or like in front of it, maybe not behind it, like for people to trust, to follow, and to, you know, to enable this kind of like a huge distribution, right? Because also like there are different channels now within which we can distribute the products. Emmet, so I was wondering about a J12 lens. Like, where does J12 lean in, you know, like data crunch and other infra bets versus applied AI like Dropcode, Pistachio, or Dima? What's your thesis in one line? You kind of mentioned it already at the very beginning of the, like, when introducing yourself, but maybe you can
to build on that again. I guess we're very much led by the lens and the belief that two things are true at the moment. Intelligence is becoming more advanced, more abundant, lower cost. But at the same time, we're almost at day zero when it comes to seeing that intelligence in production delivering real gains. So the two greenfield fronts that kind of opens up to us is to invest in the infrastructure and tooling that makes AI practical, practical and valuable at scale in use, and to invest in the domain-specific products that put AI and apply it in specific processes. So we invest across those enablers and application spheres. I mentioned a few of them earlier. I think to double click a little bit on the AI application side of things, I would say, you know, for us, our preference is probably less where we see a lot of VC dollars and press release kind of focused at the moment or to date, where it's kind of the fast adopting areas like AI for software development or marketing or customer support, these kind of workflows that are pretty digital already. So it's easier to put a non-human intelligence within those workflows, or there's a lot of data that kind of already readily exists. And our preference kind of steers towards, let's say, more complex domains where that complexity maybe comes from those domains being historically under-digitized, where maybe there's a combination of the digital world having to interact with the physical world. So let's say manufacturing or logistics, where maybe regulation is quite prominent. So industrial AI, manufacturing, energy, construction, some parts of healthcare, those are typically domains that that we gravitate towards when it comes to kind of the application of AI. Not to say there will, of course, be huge companies built in that first segment that I mentioned, but I think there's a greater risk that capital becomes one of the key weapons in which to win in those spaces. And we choose some of the more complex domains where I think it's harder to wield capital as a weapon to win in those areas.
Emmett, thank you so much for this answer. And I wanted to, because soon we're going to move on to a rapid fire game. But before we do that, I have two more things I wanted to discuss with you. And they're also kind of like, I like those questions, and I like they're also kind of gamey ones. Like, so the first one would be like, if you were to, I don't know, lead Europe for, like, let's say, for a day, like, what would be concrete steps? I know we can't fix everything in a day, but if you had a magic wand and you could just, you know, wave a magic wand to fix, to fix Europe, concrete steps that you would take would be, you know, in like, you know, capital formation, energy build out, compute access, sovereign data, talent visas. What's the order of operations?
Good question. As you started to mention a few, I think there's a lot necessary. It's kind of it's an ecosystem of development that needs to take place. For me, one of the most important areas is to mobilize more institutional capital to invest in venture and deep tech and high risk endeavors. I think Europe still lags when it comes to unlocking large institutional capital to invest in venture as an asset class and European venture as an asset class. So incentivizing that deployment would be one thing. You also mentioned it, kind of the expansion of compute infrastructure. And we touched upon it earlier, the energy infrastructure and capacity needed to support that. So again, whether that comes through, I guess there are multiple approaches to having that build out. There's the incentivization of capital to invest in the technology that can build that out. There's the subsidization of those that are either investing or building in those spaces. I think there's making policy and paths to big projects, going from planning to realization, making those as kind of red tape free as possible. I think, you know, we have to look at these things. You see the speed with which some infrastructure is being built out in the US, and I think we need to try to match that here. And then the last point would probably be, as I said earlier, talent is kind of the biggest fuel to early stage companies. So all that we can do to incentivize the retention of the best AI researchers and entrepreneurial talent, or to attract it from other areas. You know, now that I saw some data recently showing that kind of, you know, the US has started to go from like a net importer of AI talent to more of an exporter, and, you know, visa changes and certain other trends have led to some talent kind of either having a harder time to enter that market or looking to leave it. I think we need to capitalize on making sure that people want to build here, and ultimately the best talent will build where they have access to the best other talent, the best resources, access to capital, and, as I said earlier, where access to customers is also good. So we need to make it easy for enterprise to adopt new technology as well. That's not only a policy thing, that's probably a cultural thing. But I think if we solve for everything else, but it's always going to be 3 times quicker to sell to US enterprises than European ones, people will move to the US anyway.
No, couldn't agree more. Emmett, so another one, I think pretty interesting. So like kind of year ahead call of yours, like the next 12 months, I would like to hear your contrarian bet, your safe bet, and one myth you hope dies.
Okay, contrarian bet. I guess it's in line with our thesis that I mentioned a moment ago. I think the most successful agentic AI use cases will be unseen to most of us. I think they'll be in the back offices of enterprises, in logistics and inventory and procurement and kind of dry back office things, rather than where a lot of attention is now on maybe, I don't know, agents for shopping, agents for automating email or browser-based AI. I think these will not be delivering value as quickly. And some of them will be, you know, areas of, okay, hype has exceeded expectations in the near term, maybe there's something there longer. I think where we'll see real value is probably going to be unseen to many of us. I don't know how contrarian that is, but it's where less of the media lens and money seems to go, so let's take that as a measure. On the safe side, I think most enterprises will continue to feel that their data infrastructure is the hindrance to them actually deploying AI. So investments in companies that are solving for data governance, for unstructured data pipelines, for vector databases, for, you know, all of these kind of bottlenecks that prevent AI, I think those are those are amongst the best places to be investing and building now. And that's where kind of a lot of enterprise buyers are. I think we'll safely see that in the near term as well. And then lastly, the myth that I hope dies. Whether I hope it dies or not, I guess I'm maybe kind of neutral. The myth that I think will die is the idea. I think to date we've seen that open source models don't compete with the kind of closed frontier labs. Mm-hmm. I think increasingly we see that open source is competing. I think within the next year, we'll probably see that even more so, that open source AI is is at the frontier and delivering at least as much value as the closed models, particularly kind of task-specific models trained on open source. I think we'll see that those are as powerful or more powerful than some of what the big labs are pushing out. And that's maybe going to flip a little bit the narrative or the buying behavior of a lot of companies. And yeah, it might also be a contributor to a bubble burst, pop, deflation, however that correction is termed. Mm.
I like it. Emmett, so, okay, this is the time usually in the podcast where I play a little game with my guests. It's like a rapid fire game. So I shoot a quick question at you. Give me a fast answer. Are you up for playing?
Let's do it.
All right, let's go. What's Europe's AI superpower and what's our kryptonite?
Superpower is talent. Kryptonite, probably general forward-leaning risk appetite.
Mm. Yeah. Nice. If AI is the race, how many, that's your favorite, I remember from the from the off the record conversation. If AI is the race, how many charging stations do we actually have?
Not nearly enough. I'd say we have talent, but we have limited compute and power.
One regulation you'd keep and one you would rewrite for founders tomorrow?
Tough. Now I'd say keep. I think GDPR has got a lot of flack, but in the end, built trust and good data discipline for a lot of people in time. Rewrite. I think the AI Act can have more proportionality, so startups can be nimbler.
Nice. Okay, so now help me spot the Copilot Mirage. What looks shiny but moves the needle like 0.2%?
I would say most AI agents, to be honest. If it's not a coding agent or maybe customer support agent, then I think most agents are moving the needle quite slightly, probably requiring a lot of human oversight.
No. Good. Let's have a short infra test. What proves a seed stage infra startup can compound?
Early developer love and usage, high usage growth before revenues kick in, but developer love mostly.
Nice. I'm going to have a last one for you now. Yeah, how about you finish the sentence for us? So AI isn't a bubble if we
focus on infrastructure, deployment, and real productivity rather than hype.
Nice.
The other way to finish that sentence is AI isn't a bubble if we don't believe it is.
Amazing. I like it. I like it a lot. Nice. Emmett, thank you so much for joining me today on the podcast. I liked it a lot. I think people will love it. Thanks so much. And I hope to see you soon in Barcelona, maybe.
Thanks a lot, Martin. Looking forward.